This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Joyce Goh, and the morning run begins. It's a sharp ascent into the stratosphere. We're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock this morning with a range of interviews and news and analysis. It is the 22nd of February. It's a Thursday. And remember, you can always be part of this conversation by WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899 or tweeting us at BFM Radio. Joyce, you have a Twitter account, don't you?
I do.
And
I
are you active on it?
Not really. I am for work, but out of work, not really. I'm more on Instagram and Facebook.
Oh, you're such a millennial-ish type person. Okay. Now, as we slept, because the world didn't stop spinning, and we had a lot of news flow, we had news of the death of extraordinarily influential U.S. Evangelist Billy Graham. He died at the age of 99. Joyce, I tried to look up whether he came to Malaysia. Apparently, he didn't. He came close to Singapore.
Okay. But I remember him. I remember my parents and people just talking about Billy Graham and his books and all that, right? Yeah. He's really out there and really popular.
Yeah, and you also, I think, marked the move into using television as a medium for preaching.
That's right.
And you know, it said, at least in some of the news that I read, that he has probably been the most exposed, Christian evangelist of his time. It really marks a sea change in the approach to, persuading and influencing people.
Sure. Did you know that he preached his final revival meeting in New York in 2005 when he was 86? So,
and then, that's some time ago.
Yeah,
so that's like a couple of years ago.
So he passed on what? He was 99?
He was 99.
99 years of age. Mm.
Now, also some news from a church in Singapore that captured headlines for a while, the City Harvest Mega Church in Singapore,
okay.
Because their leaders were prosecuted for financial scandals.
Huge. It was huge. I mean, the scandal was the biggest corruption case in Singapore that Singapore has seen in years. $50 million.
Yeah, and you remember one of the elements in that story was how the wife of the pastor had money, funneled towards her
pop music career. Yes, exactly.
And I was wondering, what kind of, intellectual, mental gymnastics, the members of the church must have had to, do in order to accept this
as a kind of strategy.
Okay, so
the messaging was that the pastor's wife was using her pop music career to reach out to non-Christians. So that was her way of reaching out.
Yeah, but if you saw some of the videos, it sounds like she's doing pole dancing.
So what's happening? He tried to flee, right?
Of the leaders.
One of the leaders,
right? So he was in charge of finances, Chu Eng Han. He tried to flee Singapore by boat. He had bought a boat, but he was caught.
Okay, he was in a small boat heading towards Malaysia.
Oh, land of the free. Okay. And in South America, the head of the Catholic Church has sent a representative to investigate allegations of sex abuse. Of course, the Catholic Church has been dogged by such allegations for more than a decade now. I think a decade in which they finally took these allegations very seriously. The Pope is actually himself in a bit of trouble because at the center of the controversy in Chile is a bishop who he had elevated, and he had recently said that the man had done no wrong.
I see.
He stepped back, he's apologized for that, and he's allowing an independent investigation into the matter. So all that happened while you slept soundly. Now, we'll be back with a look at siblings and empathy. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Tommy James and the Shondells with Crimson and Clover. I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Joyce Goh. And the morning run continues. We're having a look at parenting a very interesting angle on parenting, because a lot of us know, and it's obvious to us, that our parents have a tremendous influence on who we are and how we turn out. But what about our siblings, to the extent that we do have siblings? I have an older brother.
An older brother.
So the question is, how much of that relationship factors in who you are now?
Yeah, so that we have an article here that shows that research from University of Calgary and University of Toronto showed that siblings can have as dramatic an impact as parents on one's development, including developing empathy, right? So research found that children who are kind, supportive, and understanding influence their siblings to act and behave in a similar way, Sharad.
You know, there's something quite intuitive about this. You know, in fact, it seemed to me that you don't need to do research to come up with this insight. And I know that in watching parents, that they're very careful to, to the extent they are, cultivate good relationships between siblings, right? So they don't play favorites. They don't do all those kinds of things that create enmity and also ill feelings between children.
Yes.
Right? What you want to do is make your children feel that they can rely on each other.
Yes, and connect between two of them. They can play with each other, and if anything, they have each other. Yeah, in a way, that's true. So yeah, it's true. You don't need research to prove that. But it's interesting to see that, you know, how siblings is not just parents, as you said, but it's also siblings and how that influences a child. But also when you look at siblings, it's also a way for kids to learn how to share, you know, take turns. I tell my kids, you know, take turns, wait for your turn. You know, sometimes
do they respond positively to that?
Taking turns rather than sharing. So I feel like, oh, wait for your turn, you know. I'll say you have to share, but I think my youngest still trying to understand what share, right? So when I say take turns, wait for your turn, Coco's turn, and then I think he gets that.
But, you know, there's also this really bizarre thing that happens with kids is that sometimes they, you know, and parents have the strategy where they give the same thing to each of the children, and yet there's this feeling of that one child will still want the other child's
thing. The younger
thing.
Child will want the...
Is it always the younger child?
I find that with my kids and my friends' kids, like we talk about this all the time, how the younger kid still wants whatever that the older sibling has. In a way, it can be the same spoon, the same bag, like same color, everything, down to the color, the pattern, everything. But somehow the older sibling's spoon or bag is cooler.
Yeah, and so what's going on? So, it, you know, clearly it's not the thing that the child wants. It's more like defining the limits of yourself and others and that relationship. So perhaps what the child, you know, and this is where maybe parents, and I'm very sympathetic to parents, you know, trying to find a solution to this problem, focus on the thing. The thing is the bag, the spoon, the clothing. My parents, mother used to dress us in exactly the same thing.
I do the same thing. Yeah, I dress my kids in the same outfits as well sometimes, yeah.
But what if the thing, the issue is not the thing, the issue is the relationship. So the child still craves what the other has because it's trying to define the limits of what it can demand as a being.
Right.
And this other entity out there.
So you know what happens in my home? They exchange the same thing.
Oh, they exchange things.
Yeah, they exchange. So the Coco and him will, and the younger sibling will exchange the bags or the spoons and all that, and then the younger one will be okay. Then later on, after a few minutes, then they exchange again. Sometimes it happens.
Okay, so does your elder child ever feel that he has gotten the short end of the stick, that somehow he's the one that's always having to make the sacrifices?
I try. No, he doesn't. He's a really good older brother. He tries to. He'll keep saying, oh, you know, my baby brother wants this. And also, we try not to let him have to give in too much. But of course, sometimes it is they exchange and then they exchange it back in a way, you know.
Right,
but I also try and teach the younger one about sharing and taking turns, and it's working out now sometimes.
Well, you know, like I said, I have a tremendous sympathy for parents who have to do. Tell us how you deal with potential sibling rivalry or sibling love, and to what extent you attentive those issues. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back with a look at the House of Happiness. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, The Jam with Town Call Malice. I'm Sharad Kutan, with me, Joyce Goh. And the morning run continues. We've had quite a few tweets coming in, mostly from Samuel Tan. Thank you, Samuel, who says that he's, I guess, quite surprised by how well behaved your kids are, Joyce.
My kids, they have their moments, of course, but the older one is more well behaved than a younger one.
Okay, yeah. So we're talking about sibling and how they can stay together, or they can be, you know, torn apart by sibling rivalry. That's, you know, often a dynamic in families as well.
But it's very cute to watch them play together and, you know, this whole sibling thing. Yeah, it's really nice.
I love it. And especially, I think their batteries, do you change their batteries every so often? Or
what
kids,
batteries?
Don't kids come with batteries?
No, I mean, I don't know. Sure,
right. Oh, batteries not included. Is
no.
That with children? Oh, I see. Okay.
Unlimited energy, okay? Oh, so mommy and the daddies there are like, hurry up, bedtime.
Oh, I didn't realize that children didn't come with batteries. Okay, so if you have a take on how to improve the relationship between your children and what would take to make them grow up to be adults with a good dose of empathy for others, for, you know, their joys and sadness, and you know, being able to put themselves in the feet in the shoes of others, tell us what you think. Remember, you can always WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Speaking of happy families, there is a new local movie in town, Joyce, which is rocking the box office. It's taken $1 million so far in its first week.
Wow.
And which is quite unusual. We don't often
spend million ringgit in a week.
Yeah, I believe so. And, you know, it's one of those movies that is doing several things. It's also giving life to a part of the country that has been long neglected. So this is the town of Batu Arang, which was a very important town in Malaya, you know, 100 years ago. And some people know it's some of its strangest history. It was also where the first Malaysian Soviet was established. Yes, a workers' Soviet was established in the town of Batu Arang all those years ago. But leaving aside history, looking at the contemporary, the question is, why has a movie like this, you know, pulled the heartstrings of Malaysians? And more importantly, why has it gotten them to part with their money? Because we often think of the big box office hits that are coming from the US and coming from other parts of the world that are really getting Malaysians, you know, putting their ringgit down.
Yeah, and for the timing of this screening as well, because usually Chinese New Year screening slots are traditionally for, you know, the Hong Kong movies and all that. People want to go watch the foreign Chinese films that are coming out. But it's interesting that this local one has done really well. And it's actually a family comedy. And the film tells the story of Uncle Shui, an elderly ice cream seller with Alzheimer's disease, and his relationship with his wife and their children. And basically, that's about that. So when was the last time you watched a locally produced movie, Sean?
You know, I must admit, I can't even remember. I've been racking my brain to remember when it was that I watched, you know, a movie that was locally produced. I believe it was Interchange, which was done by Dane Syed.
I see.
Which I watched maybe a year ago. Mm. And I must admit, sometimes when I go to a cinema, I don't have any plans and I'm just trying to figure out what movie to watch. I'm a little hesitant with the local movies. I tell myself intellectually I really should, you know, and that part of me that, you know, to the extent that I'm nationalistic or patriotic, I think, yeah, maybe I should go and support local movies. But then, you know, sometimes I just want to relax, and I think whatever it is with the foreign films, I'll get a level of production values that will satisfy me.
So speaking of production value and local movies, I watched J Revolusi last year, and the production value is pretty good. I mean, it's about the Unit Tindakan cast, and there are a lot of fight scenes as well. And
some of the action movies have become quite big.
That was pretty good. And actually, Andy Lau's he owns a movie company that has a stake in this movie, and he thought like the kung fu moves and all that somehow linked to this movie as well. So this J Revolusi turned out to be pretty entertaining.
All right. So tell us what you think. If you've seen the movie or if you plan to see it, remember you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, coming up is the first bulletin of the morning, but taking us there, Cheap Trick and Surrender. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, The Clash with Lost in the Supermarket. I'm Sharad Kutin, and with me, Joyce Goh. Kids get lost in supermarkets, don't they, sometimes?
Do they?
They do. You always hear these announcements
Yes, I remember
saying,
that.
Oh, you know, will the parents of Screaming yes. Child please come
but
and
you hear that
them.
More last time compared to now. I think parents are a bit more paranoid now.
Have you seen parents using leashes on their children?
Yeah, I have. Actually,
does it make you feel uncomfortable as a parent?
A bit.
You do, huh?
But then, but it's very hard to judge in a way because, you know, different people, different situations. Because sometimes you don't know. Maybe they really need that at that time. I'm not sure.
I guess, you know, it's all done out of love and concern for the child, especially because in crowded places, kids can go missing. In fact, we're going to continue this theme on families and children. We'll look at a town in the state of Vermont in the U.S. with a population of roughly 3,000 people that's produced 11 Olympians. You can already see the headlines, right? A little town, 11 Olympians. It's extraordinary. 9 Winter Olympians and 2 Summer Olympians. In total, these 11 have bagged some 3 medals, including 1 gold. Now, that is that's not underachievement. That's overachievement.
Definitely.
By any means. You know.
And the population is only roughly 3,000 people.
Right. So this might get a lot of people excited. They say, wow, maybe this is a model to create, you know, super athletes, right?
Yeah, but is there something in the water? Yeah.
It could be the fluoride. Sometimes it's the fluoride. Not just sparkling teeth, but good bones. But apparently, you know, it's not a hothouse for children to become athletes. Quite the opposite. It is a place where the town apparently collectively raises its children to be and to love sports. And, you know, this is how it's expressed. They take the approach of, you know, stressing participation over prowess, generosity of spirit over the hoarding of resources, and sportsmanship over one-upmanship.
Right.
Now, that's a nice formulation of what seems almost utopian. It's like this perfect little society, you know, imbued with progressive values that are bringing up, you know, successful children.
Yeah, and sure, they even encourage our kids not to specialize in a single sport, and they even root for their rivals. And parents also encourage their kids to simply enjoy themselves. And in a way, they also how they raise the kids there is they treat their neighbor's child as their own. So it's more of a collective effort to raise the child rather than just you yourself raising the child.
As an individual. So this thing about, you know, not focusing on a single sport, you know, seems idyllic, right? Because in some ways, the opposite model is one where you focus on a single task and you repeat and repeat
and
repeat.
Yeah, you work on it.
Work on it. And you just get very good at a single thing, like swimming or
tennis.
Playing tennis or something. Mm. And that is, I think, the dominant model. I'm not quite sure how sports policy operates in Malaysia, but it would be interesting to note where we have gone, because there's so much, importance placed on the performance and the outcome.
Right.
You know, we are, in fact, excited by those medals. In fact, you know, when you read those headlines, you know, it's the 11 Olympians with those medals, right, that count.
But now sometimes it's about effort as well. You tell the child, oh, good effort, or you participated, rather than, oh, because you won the medal. So the modern way of parenting, in a way. Some people talk about that. But what's interesting in Norwich also is that it has poor cellular service, making its residents less spending less time on your phones and smartphones.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently, according to this article, compared to many other Americans. And also, parents that work near to their homes in jobs that allows them to spend time with their kids. And they even leave work early once a week to go skiing together. So I guess it's also the whole concept and the whole setup in that town where, you know, maybe it's possible, but
okay, so the thing is this a model then that we can't replicate on a national level? We can't perhaps even replicate on a neighborhood level in, you know, and say in many suburbs in the Klang Valley, just because we don't live such lives. I mean, our lives are
sometimes we're stuck in traffic for like 1 hour or even more than that just to get to work.
At which point you might be giving your cellular phone to your child, a smartphone, and say, play on this, don't disturb daddy and mummy.
Well, there's some things you can learn, like frame sports as fun and let the kids own their activities. That's in a way, don't be overprotective or do helicopter parenting. These are some of the tips given in the article as well. So these are possible in a way. But the ones like living close to your home, sometimes that's not doable.
That maybe is where the magic is.
Where you live.
Maybe that's the mineral in the water. Okay, we'll be back with a look at a man who's made a name for himself in creating political spectacle. Jamal Yunus, who else? Leader of the Red Shirts. We'll be back. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, The Who with My Generation. I'm Sharad Kutin, and with me, Joyce Goh, who's not part of my generation. We're a generation apart, I think. And remember, you can always join us in this conversation by WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. Leave your name so we know who you are, or you can follow us on Twitter. We've been talking about kids, we've been talking about empathy, sibling rivalry, we've also talked about that movie, The Family of Happiness, is it? What's that called again?
Happy
Families.
Happy House, right?
House of Happiness,
yeah.
I'm going to go and see that movie. I'm now really excited. I think, well, I really should catch this movie. I have, now that we've been talking about it, I did see some other, but more art house Malaysian movies, like Jagat.
I see.
I remember seeing Jagat, which is superb. And if it ever comes back to the cinemas, you must catch it. Or find some way of watching that film. Now, we are in some people like to call silly season. It is the elections. They're upon us. You know, we're even the front page of the Star this morning is gearing up to GE14. So even the media is in the mood. It knows that it could be any time now.
Yes.
All right. And as a result, we have all kinds of people muscling in, trying to get some visibility. And there's one man who's made a name for himself in terms of creating these media spectacles. I don't know how effective they are, but he certainly gets everybody talking about it. To that extent, he is effective. Jamal Yunus, once a leader of the Red Shirts, but of course he's the Sungai Besar UMNO chief. He has recently donated a mock check of 7 billion... Not million, but seven billion ringgit to Parti Pribumi Bersatu Malaysia, or Bersatu as we call them. And he did that in order to assist Bersatu in its efforts in the upcoming general elections. Obviously meant in a kind of ironic tone.
Yeah, so he claimed that the motive behind his move was to assist Parti Pribumi to their efforts in their upcoming GE14. And he says in quotes, "What this check is valid until 2022, and it's a symbol of 22 years under Tun Dr. M, his leadership."
Right. So, Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, of course, was our Prime Minister for about 22 years. And for the longest time was kind of a central icon of UMNO as a political party and its successful governance. I think that was the narrative. The narrative, of course, has changed dramatically since Dr. Mahathir left UMNO and joined ranks with the federal opposition, the Pakatan Harapan. But what do you make of this gesture? Do you think, Joyce, that most Malaysians would be, attracted by a politician who does these things? Because we have had politicians on the other end side of the aisle from the Pakatan, especially before they got power, who also did things like that. I remember politicians or political leaders getting together, delivering a pillow to Abdullah Badawi, during the time, sort of criticizing him for his so-called sleepiness.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the voters. I mean, individual voters have different reasons for who or which party they vote for. So really, at the end of the day, depends on the individual's preference of what they prefer. But coming back to Jamal's antics, right? I remember just last year, he also caused some news headlines, right? Because of what did he do in October?
So he's done a few things. He's gone to the state secretary in Selangor, dressed in, I think he was in his towel during the water crisis, saying you need to take a shower
there.
Yeah,
so he likes to do all these.
Yeah, smashing water, beer bottles. I think he did that.
Yeah,
too.
In protest of the Better Beer Festival at Selangor State Secretariat Building Gate. I think that's where he smashed the beer bottles.
Right.
Yeah, this was the one in October last year. Sure.
So if you're not predisposed to him and his politics, you're probably not be attracted by this gesture. But it's going to get people talking, as we have been talking about it. In fact, the talk has to come to an end. We are looking at the next bulletin of the morning, and Sabrina Maglin is going to be giving you the news. But before that, we have Block Party, This Modern Love. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Good morning. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Joyce Goh, and more news and analysis coming your way. Remember, you can always be part of this conversation by WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899 or tweeting us at BFM Radio. Now, it is the season to be talking about politics, to be talking about the upcoming general election. A lot of speculation, Joyce, about when it's going to be. Do you have your own?
I think my guess is wrong, really. It was March, remember? We were sharing it the other day.
You think it's, so March is no go, you think?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
when do you think it'll be?
I have no guess. I mean, for me, it's at some level, it's really unimportant about the when. It's the what are people most concerned about.
Exactly. No, that's true. But of course, everybody wants to know when so that you can kind of
prepare, especially us in the media.
Yeah, right? In the media and as parents and with school holidays coming up in March and you know, all these other things.
And as a parent, but you scheduling. Know, as a media worker, you would have had your leave frozen indefinitely.
Exactly.
And that, of course, also makes the rounds. And, you know, you'll have these WhatsApp messages with, in such and such media organization, leave has been frozen.
Yeah.
And it's always taken to me a definitive, statement about when the elections will be. It often isn't.
Mm-hmm.
But that's those are the tea leaves we have been reading for some time now. Now, according to Malay Mail Online, they're quoting a study now by a group at the International Islamic University. It's an electoral study group. They're looking at what Malaysians consider a trusted news source. And what's interesting in terms of the outcome is from this survey is it says that Malaysians still prefer traditional media over social media.
Interesting. Yeah. And out of this traditional media, the winner is television. Yeah, television is actually apparently now Malaysians' most trusted news source.
And radio comes in second, doesn't it?
Yes, radio is number two with 63% of respondents expressing faith in the medium. And newspapers is at 61%.
I wonder though, Joyce, when they talk about radio, there are very few talk radio stations in the country and very few that deal explicitly with news and analysis. Much of the field is contemporary hits radio stations. So I'm not quite sure if that's where people are getting their trusted news.
It's interesting. I mean, it'll be good if we can find out the sample size and who are these respondents and where is this coming from,
and
right?
What kind of television are they watching? Are they watching and referring to RTM television stations?
Or TV3?
Or TV3, mm-hmm. Some of the privatized ones.
Mm-hmm.
Because
or CNN?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm actually quite surprised by this because I guess I've followed the assumption that traditional media has long lost its credibility.
Yeah,
it's seen to be politically, the politics of those media organizations often follow from the ownership structure or governance structure of those organizations.
Well, Sharad, the study showed that 7 in 10 Malaysians expressed their trust in television irrespective of race or age. And in contrast, the study ranked Twitter as the least trustworthy source. Over 7 in 10 respondents mistrusting news shared on Twitter.
Yeah, I'd like to know who these...
Yeah, the sample size
yeah.
The age, as well as, where are these respondents from? And
yeah, because it doesn't seem to reflect the views of anybody I know, regardless of so-called race and regardless of age. At least in my circles, there's a general antipathy towards a distrust of mainstream media. Now, we spoke to Dr. Julian Hopkins, he's a lecturer at Monash University. We asked him for his opinion on why TV is seen as more trustworthy. Is it a question of seeing is believing?
Yeah, I think that's still very important. I mean, for most people, seeing is believing, and that's still really important. And I think also television is an institution. They have editors and producers. So when people see news on TV, they assume it's gone through a few levels of clearance. So it's not just one person on Twitter sending something out there. But looking forward, I mean, looking to the future, it's also important that there are new technologies now which use artificial intelligence and use video editing to make very convincing like videos which are photoshopped in effect, but they're videos. And so one day in the not too far future, you might get videos which are actually made up.
We also asked Julian for his thoughts on whether the study showed any conclusive trends about how Malaysians consume information.
I still think in general there's still more trust in news institutions. Like I was saying, you've got editors and producers to control what goes out. I think it would also be interesting to know what topics are trusted more. I mean, most Malaysians know that the mainstream media has a strong government bias when it comes to political matters, so they may trust it for some things and not for others. And also, I think social media is a very general label. If you ask somebody about social media and do they trust social media, they've seen so many things on social media that they will say, well, you can't trust everything. But I think most people who use social media a lot, they will have certain people that they follow on social media who they do trust. So it's also about knowing exactly the specific content they're referring to.
And finally, we asked him whether this survey disproves the view that traditional media is on its way out.
I think there's no doubt that traditional media is losing space to newer media. But it's important to think that new and old media exist alongside each other. I mean, books haven't yet died out, although they're very old technology, and video hasn't killed radio yet. And really, the most important, I think, is who or what is behind the content that people consume. And people will trust producers of content, not the medium in itself.
That was Dr. Julian Hopkins of Monash University on his thoughts about a new survey that's been done pitting old media versus new media, in which old media or traditional media or mainstream media has come out tops, in particular television.
Yeah, television. Sure, I checked back. The survey directly polled 2,551 respondents between November 25th last year and January 7th this year. So that is the sample size that we're talking about. As who are they and the age, not sure.
Right, okay. So, you know, one can, if you don't like the conclusion, you can always cast doubt on the methodology. I think that's one strategy to go. But if we, you know, take on board what Julian Hopkins is saying, is that perhaps it's also the way the questions are framed that produces results. And we know this about surveys, right? So yes. If your terms are too broad, that perhaps people will have a general, might answer in a particular way. I do think, though, you know, when he talked about the gatekeeping that goes on in the media, I don't know how many people who consume media actually know that, and they know the difference between the gatekeeping that happens in, say, a newspaper, for instance, mm-hmm. versus what happens in online media. Online media often very pared down hierarchy of gatekeeping. Perhaps they're much slimmer, such more nimble, small organizations. Do people know this background, and will make a distinction?
Well, I think people now, the way they consume media, because there are just so many outlets and ways of consuming media, right, that people are a lot more, they're wiser for sure. Like sometimes you can read a headline and you know, oh, is that for real? And then you have to go in and read further. And you can actually, from that article, you can go on and do your other research and check on that, right? And I think Dr. Julian has a good point. He said people would trust the producers of the content, not the medium of the content. That is true, because at the end of the day, you can deliver the content any other way, but if you can trust the person delivering it, that is the person producing the content. Sometimes the person delivering is a different person altogether, but it boils down to content and trust. And now, given what's online now and the world technology, the world of tech, it's very difficult to control news.
Absolutely.
Or messaging in a way that if you want to control it, is very difficult, you know, because people are wiser down, they're smarter. They know how to go and actually find out what is the real story behind it, right?
Now, we're going to put out a little poll. If you have a view on this, you can always WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us BFM Radio. No poll maybe, but just tell us, what's your most trusted source of news? Is it A, BFM, B, BFM, or C, all of the above?
Right, Sharad.
We'll be back with more news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.